Fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Hope you enjoyed last week's archive. I was at the Rodney Strong concert. It was the Reverend Al Green. And, you know, that is just, it's a great venue. It's a great venue. And it was a perfect and perfectly delightful show. If you're a guest of the winery, you have a tent, you get to hang out in the tent and eat and drink, and there's a little tiny walkway to your seats, which are shaded, and, you know, you're not close to the stage, but on the other hand, you have a seat, and it's in the shade, and, you know, you can go grab a glass of wine if you want to, and it's all very civilized and pleasant, and Al Green was really good. Not so good that I needed to go down to the front of the stage like I often do. So it was just a great evening, afternoon, evening out. And it is really a fabulous venue. It's been going on for years now. You know, you can find information about it at Rodney Strong's website for the rest of this year. And keep it in mind for next year. It's really fun. Hope you've made it to a farmer's market. I was at the Sebastopol Farmer's Market today for a very, very long time, most of the day, in fact. And, it's so great to see summer in full swing. Just a week ago, there were maybe two or three vendors with tomatoes, and now even tomatoes are really starting to come on. A lot of people have peaches and other stone fruit. Saw several of the first locally grown melons today, and there'll be more and more of those now for several weeks. So there's no reason not to shop at your local farmer's market. And make a day of it, you know. It's our town square these days, the farmer's markets. And speaking of farmer's markets, we have one of our fish vendors. He has been selling at the Sebastopol Farmers Market for quite some time and also at the Hillsburg Market. Has also recently joined the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market up at Wells Fargo on Saturdays. And on that note, hi, Dave.
How you doing?
Today, I'm good. It's Dave LeGros of the Fishing Vessel Bumblebee. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's correct. So how long have you been fishing?
Well, I started fishing in 74.
74. And I have to just add, I want to add this to it. That was when you were working as a full-time detective for the Santa Rosa Police Department?
Well, I worked for the Sheriff's Department.
Oh, Sheriff's Department.
So there's a big difference.
Oh, there is. And I'm sorry for getting it wrong. And I knew that. I was even picturing the right place. Yeah. I just said
it
wrong.
One riot, one sheriff, you know.
Yes. So you, for Sheriff's Department, for a long time. You worked on some pretty well-known cases.
75 till 04. Uh-huh. But I started fishing in 74 after I graduated from UC Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And in those days, you could buy a license for $50 and put it on any boat and go fishing. Now it's regulated pretty much. So in those days, it was sort of like an old western town on the docks with all these little makeshift boats tied up.
And,
really? Yeah, it was quite the old western type of a scene. A lot of characters, a lot of people hiding from the law. In those days, marijuana smuggling was a big thing, so there was a little bit of that going on, and it was just, it was a different time.
Sort of like the internet was in 1994, when it was really the Wild West.
Yeah, when Al invented it, yeah.
So when you were fishing in 74, were you just fishing for fun? Or were you selling?
Well, yeah, I had a lust for the sea and adventure and being on the edge. And my older brother, he got involved with me. We bought an old wooden boat, one of the old Monterey boats, which were prevalent then. And they're based on the old felucca hull. The Italians had them down in the city.
Now, I think the majority of people listening don't know what that kind of hull is. You want me to explain a little?
It's basically, it looks, you see the cute little boats down at Fisherman's Wharf. Uh-huh. They're all painted up and they have the sort of square, you know, actually a round compromise stern, they call it, which is like a canoe stern. And they have a little sprit in the front, like a clipper bow, like the old clipper ships.
Uh-huh.
And they are based on the Italian boat, which they used sails in the 1800s, and they've got little engines starting in the 1900s. And then now, of course, they're not, you know, they don't work utility-wise. They're just, they're slow, and they can't carry much fish. So.
Mm-hmm. But that's what you started out with.
Started a little.
And at that point, were you fishing the bay, or were you going out the gate?
Oh, it was all ocean. We went down.
Oh, really?
We used to fish
in those
days.
So you got out of the ocean in a little boat.
Little boat. 28-foot boat.
That's astonishing.
Yeah, it was. We started fishing in those days on April 15th, and we had a season all the way to the end of September, and a lot of wind early in the season. A lot of these little makeshift boats didn't make it. I mean, we lost people every year for my first few years of fishing. And they'd start at Moss Landing, Monterey area. Then they'd work up to, the fish would work up to Half Moon Bay.
And at that point, you were fishing for?
All salmon.
All salmon, okay.
Yeah. And that first year, I lived on the boat and stayed on the boat the whole season. So it was quite the adventure.
Yeah. Wow. No kidding. Yeah. And at that point, if I remember correctly, California salmon didn't have a very good reputation for several decades, recent decades. I think it was like certainly the 80s and the early 90s. And Jan Butler, who sadly we lost him a few years ago, Jan Butler was explaining to me once about why California salmon. And then it seemed like it made this incredible rebound as people, I don't know, rediscovered it. Some people, I think it was Ned Kuhn, maybe Ned Kuhn, I'm not sure, is a fish salesman, wholesale, explained about people learning how to handle it better and it getting to market much more quickly. Were you paying attention to any of that stuff going
on? Yeah, there's been a whole revolution in the handling of fish and the marketing of fish. I'm a direct sales kind of person. I don't sell to a wholesaler. And I'm a day boat versus a trip boat. Some of the bigger boats will go out for 3, 4, and 5 day trips. They'll hold their fish, bring them into the wholesaler who'll hold them for a day and a half, and they'll get them to the Safeway and G&G and those kind of places with these, you know, 6 and 7 day old fish, which are fine, but when you get my 2 or 3 day old fish, they're better. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole deal, is a troll caught day fish.
So you go out in the early in the morning, you come back the same day?
Well, you do come back the same day, and you have to hold fish at times to sell them for Saturday and Sunday, but basically you're getting a little better product, although salmon is a marvelous fish. It holds real well and has a good flavor.
And it needs to be, to hold well, it just needs to not be bruised, right?
Yeah, and kept on ice.
Kept on ice,
a slush
course.
Is better. I mean, a slush is
ice water.
Ice water for whole fish.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then just not, one of the things I think people talked about when they were explaining why there was a problem for a while was that they were just stacked. They were thrown on top of each other. They weren't treated gently, and they got bruised a lot.
And not only that, but they weren't bled out properly.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, you cut their gill, and they bleed out, and the meat is fresher.
Oh, okay.
And it holds better. Mm-hmm. We've learned to do that through the years. And some people actually hook a little tiny hose to one of the veins and flush them out. And then, of course, some of the guys I've known have done it and overdone it and blown out some vessels, blood vessels. But if you do a good cleaning job on the fish and keep them on a nice slush, they'll hold real well for the market.
Mm-hmm. And so you sell at the was I right? Heelsburg
Santa Rosa, on Saturday and Sebastopol on Sunday. And my son, John, is doing the Wells Fargo Center.
How's that going? It's just been, weeks now?
Very good. He's very happy with it. And my daughter, Laura, is helping. She's a big help. She's been helping me since day one, back in the day when I first started doing the direct sales.
You know. And are you still selling to restaurants?
I do. When they get a hold of me, they I do sell.
Yeah, I hear some stories about you going in the kitchen at what, Chapinese, French Garden, and such.
Well, I am lucky. For a foodie, like I'm also, you know, anybody in Sonoma County has got to be a foodie. But I deliver some really classy shrimp from the Gulf for a gentleman.
Oh yes, you
Jimmy,
do,
Jimmy from Jimmy. Gulfish.
I want him on the show. I wanted him to come up here for so long.
We'll get him up here. But I fill my truck up on Friday mornings with his wonderful shrimp, and I go to all the fancy restaurants in Yountville, St. Helena, and. And I go in the back door and get to smell all the great smells of these fancy, you know, the French Laundry and Red and Bricks and, you know.
I would like to go to Red.
Yeah.
I would like to try Red. I've been to the French Laundry, and I'll just go ahead and say it on the air. I'm not really impressed. I was not impressed with the food that I had at all. And I was unimpressed with the service.
Well, I will say that they are regimented there. They have wonderful product there. They get the best produce.
They absolutely get. You could tell the ingredients were fabulous. There was no question about that. Yeah. But you know, I've wondered for quite some time. This one of the partners at Chez Panisse, and if you don't know it, Chez Panisse nearly went under about. I think it was about 4 months into their existence. It was either 4 months or 10 months. I think it was 4 months. Alice Waters had blown through all her money and was way deep in the hole, and she was going to have to close. And she put out word she wanted investors. And 16 people put in $10,000. 15 of those 16 people are the owners today. That's how the place survived.
Amazing.
And only one, I think one person cashed in, you know, did whatever you do not to be a partner anymore and moved because they were moving away. But everybody else is a partner. And one of the partners, whom I will not name, said that Chez Panisse is now in the business, especially downstairs, where, you know, which is the formal dining room. Chez Panisse is now in the business of feeding tourists. And it means that they can't be adventurous like they once were. I mean, I remember seeing posted on the menu outside, they would do an all innards menu. You know, all like tongue and gizzard, you know, just all innards. They would do very, very adventurous stuff that you didn't see. Maybe they do an all eel menu or something. And the expectation, because it's so widely known worldwide and tourists come, tourists want the Chez Panisse experience, but they don't want to be adventurous. And I've wondered if that's what's happened to French Laundry, is that they now have to really cater to the people who come to what they believe is Mecca.
Well, they're an icon. I mean, every time I drive by, I see people out there taking pictures.
Oh,
a little sign in front,
standing
in front of the sign. I'm hearing some good things about the casino over in Bodega, though. There's Mark Maliki.
Mark Maliki's been around for a long time. Casino Bar. Now, the casino
Everybody's
bar is
talking about that place.
Right up my alley. I love that. I especially love the... Did you know there's a full theater in the back?
No.
There's a full theater with velvet seats for, you know, people watching the play. Huge stage. Backstage dressing rooms. I haven't been backstage. A director's booth up over the seats, but there's only like 16 seats. Plus the seats all have drink holders, so you can get your, you know, gin and tonic or your martini or whatever and go in and see the play. But it holds 16 people. It's a hoot.
Was it a Mitchell Brothers place?
No, I don't think it was. I think it was, but I think something was going on there during Prohibition.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got to get there, you know, especially on Friday, Saturday night, you have to get there before Mark sells out because he starts serving at 4. But yeah, it's fun. And, you know, I thought the one place, super high-end restaurant that I've really loved is Cyrus. You know, Cyrus has a sense of humor. I'm really sorry to know that they're closing. Cyrus has a sense of humor about what they're doing. They don't take themselves so very seriously that you feel like you're, you know, eating in a church rather than a place where you are allowed to laugh. They will just, I mean, the food's fabulous, but sometimes they will just crack you up with what they do.
I think we'll see them again, though. I think he sort of hinted at something.
Yeah, I think that something's going to happen. I just hope they keep all the toys.
But, you know, back to the fishing. This is a banner year for salmon.
We keep reading that.
Off the coast here. And the fish have been big. And we're sort of blessed this year because the krill, which are the basis of the sea life, and have really made these local salmon very tasteful because the krill gives them a beautiful, vivid color.
And that's why we have these blue whales coming close, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so the krill are close. The fishing's close. I'm not using a lot of fuel to get out fishing, and I'm catching as many fish as I need.
Really? You know? Wow.
In fact, the market got glutted a week or so ago. Then the boats were loading up 300-400 fish, and the market got glutted. North Coast and others were just inundated with thousands of pounds of fish, and so suddenly they couldn't pay the prices they had been paying in the lean years and at the first of the season. So we had a little strike action.
12-hour strike, yeah. Right? I know. I heard it through one restaurant in Sebastopol into a panic.
But as happens so often, nature took its course, and the weather came up, and so they couldn't get out fishing, and then the fish has sort of slowed down. They're not as abundant as they were. And the water's warming up, and the fish are changing their diet a little bit. You know, they're seeing some squid coming in now. And so things will be changing here in the next month or so. The fish will probably start hugging the coast. Or they'll be looking for cold water a little deeper maybe. But so
like me. I'm always looking for cold water.
Cold water, yeah.
I was going to say. Oh, when you go out fishing, have you seen a blue whale?
No, and I actually picked up my gear with my partner, Steve, one day. And we heard that the blue whales were by the river. We were fishing by Carmet, and we said, let's go see the blue whales. And we got up there. We couldn't see them. They'd already taken off. But I keep getting sightings on them. You know. In fact, I was talking to a gentleman. He said he was down in Monterey, and he saw about 35 of them down there.
Really?
Feeding.
Well, so. I went out to the Farallon Islands once with the Oceanic Society, and we got a call saying there are two frolicking blue whales north of the islands, and we went out. Unfortunately, I was so sick that eventually the guide, our nature guide, came and lifted me up and took me over to the railing so that I could see the whales. And I saw them to the degree that I could focus my eyes, but I wasn't wearing a seasick patch.
I did see a little gray whale.
Oh, you did? Oh.
Right hugging the Bird Rock there, right by the Bodega Head.
Uh-huh.
And I know that the gray whales are noted for going up north of the Russian River and rubbing against the rocks up there by Russian Gulch. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So we're going to take a little break with a song in honor of your other career, and we'll be right back with more talk with Dave LeGros about a salmon.
Watching the detectives. Oh, he's their daughter's disappearing. So it really took a miracle to get you to stay. It only took my little fingers to blow you away. Just like watching the detectives. Don't get cute. Just like watching the detectives. Watching the detectives. Watching the detectives.
Yep, it's Mouthful. Elvis Costello, Watching the Detectives. I love getting Dave to talk about some of his detective stories. And not a lot of people know this, but he's also working on a detective novel. I think that would be really fun.
Oh, you weren't supposed to say that.
Any fishing in the novels?
I'm very reluctant to talk about my writing, but it's just it's a fun hobby I have, and I scratch out things, and I'm studying it, and it's fun. It's my fun diversion.
Which is great.
You know.
So back to Salmon. Salmon, I remember in the mid-90s when there was this resurgence both in quality and availability, price got really low. I was buying whole salmon at times for $5 a pound and less. This season, retail price hasn't really gone very low.
No, I think it's been buoyed up by the past years because demand, people are used to paying it.
Uh-huh.
And for a while there, we could have dropped it pretty high, like 2 weeks ago. It could have gone bottom for a couple of days anywhere, at least maybe a week. But now it's back to where, I mean, there's been some fishing days. They haven't been getting fish the last few days, and the wind's been up. So the market demands will be, again, by the vagaries of the sea and nature and the wind.
Yeah.
You know,
so I used to make either a side or a whole salmon's worth of gravlax, you know, every 3 weeks throughout the summer for a while there. And I haven't made gravlax in a while.
We'll have to take care of that.
And I want to talk about salmon belly. I don't know how many people cut off the belly part when they get a nice fillet or something and there's that flap, which is the belly. I don't know if people throw it on the grill with that attached or if they actually do what they should, which is cut it off, you know, worship it, pray to it, and then eat
like
it.
A pork belly,
it is so good.
Some people appreciate, I find that people, they have their likes, you know. Some people like the tail because they cook quick and they haven't got any bones. And some people like the back strap because they go on a barbecue real well. And others like the bellies because they're tasty, you know. So you have your different people. You know.
Well, in my column, my pairing column on Wednesday, I have a recipe for, a BSLT. It's a bacon, salmon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich with fairly mild romesco sauce in place of the mayonnaise. And if you make that with salmon belly, it'll be one of the best things you ever eat. It is so good.
I look forward to that. Also, if you crisp up the skin of a salmon, nothing better.
Yeah.
You know, put it in butter and just press it down in the pan.
Yeah.
And have that pan there mega hot, you know, and
yeah.
You'll get a real tasty treat out of that.
Yeah. And if you eat fish, but you don't, for whatever possible reason, eat bacon. If you scale that salmon and take the skin off and cut it in strips, that makes a real good BLT. You use the crisp salmon skin in place of the bacon, and it's pretty darn good.
I used to sell the little belly pieces on a stick. I'd put them in brown sugar, and I'd barbecue them, and I'd take them to the market, and the kids would love them, and the parents would love them.
Did I ever have
the health department didn't love them, though.
They didn't? Oh, I think I may have had it. I know I've had it from somebody. I was maybe from you.
Yeah.
That is so good. What was the health department?
Well,
they just thought people were having too much fun.
It's about having, you know, you need the food has to be so warm, and you know, it just, I couldn't do it the proper way, so we just stopped doing it.
You know?
But if you candied them, and, you know, like a smoke, and sold them vacuum packed, you could certainly have a good product for them.
Yeah, I had some of that up in Seattle when I was there in June.
Candied salmon. Well, now that there's abundance of it, I'm going to be a little more creative here. But right now, I'm just trying to keep my boat running and stay on the water and just get some fish.
How often do you go out?
Well, I go out weather, you know, when the weather's good.
Well, let's say out of 7 days, you have seven good days in a week. How many days will you go out?
Well, I mean, now it's sort of interesting because I'd get my fish probably in a day than the fish that I need.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going out, but again, the weather here, they call it Bodega for a reason, Bodega Bay. It just blows here and blows. You know, May is blown out. June is usually blown out. And this year, July has been about 50-50, maybe two-thirds blown out for little boats. Now, you have your 5 to 15 mile-an-hour winds, and my 25-foot troller can handle that. But you get to the 10 to 20-mile-an-hour winds, if I stay close, I can fish those winds.
Really?
Sometimes. But that's for a little bit bigger boat.
Yeah. Now, do you have scary things happen?
You call them scary, I call them exciting. You know? There are some exciting things happening out there, yeah.
What kind of things?
Well, I mean, you got whales coming underneath your boat. Your boat runs, and you go by the sound of your boat engine and the way it runs. And if you're trolling along and fishing, all of a sudden the engine starts puttering and sputtering, your heart flutters because you're out there on your own. So you need to have extra parts. Your boat needs to be in good condition.
You might
condition.
Have to, like, fix your engine.
Well,
you
could do things. You could have to do things. The water pumps sometimes go out and belts go off, you know. But the fisherman today cannot afford to have a machinist work on his boat necessarily all the time. They need to do their own work. Hydraulics, electronics, electrics, woodwork, fiberglass work, engine work. You just can't afford.
Really?
You know, the fishermen in California, I understand they have about 3,000 permits out there, salmon permits. But there's only about 500 to 700, I believe, that are active. And it's a very diminishing business.
Mm-hmm.
And not too many youngsters are getting into it. There's more exciting things to do in the world than go out and go fishing. So we see, I don't see a lot of upsurge, a lot of old timers. I mean, the average age of a commercial fisherman in California is in their low 60s.
Wow.
So it's going to be, a thing of the past. And,
really?
We've been farm salmon is a big, competitor for salmon. It's taken a lot of our market.
It doesn't taste very good.
Well,
and it's not good for you.
Farm salmon is the closest thing to a turd that you could get. They really are.
You have to explain why.
Well, there's no omega 3 in the fish. Number one,
none.
It's all food coloring.
Right, that I knew.
They're given antibiotics no matter what they tell you. They're in caged pens. They're close together. They have to have antibiotics, or they get diseases and die. Some of the countries, I think, are trying to call their fish organic, and they're trying to get away with that by feeding the fish other fish. So they're going out and they're catching, fish, and they're grinding them up and feeding them to the salmon, and they're saying, well, that's organic, so they're organic. Well, I don't know how it's flying, but they're just desperate to get certified as organic. Farm salmon is, there are some, although I will say up in Canada, there are some close that are not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, farm salmon is a very poor product.
I don't recommend it. I don't eat it.
Well, it's perfect for America middle class because you can go to Costco and get it for $6.99 a pound and think you're dying and gone to heaven, So, but if you laid a piece of farm salmon on the sidewalk next to a piece of California king salmon, the king salmon would be sitting there firm and fresh for a good length of time, and that farm salmon would just melt into the pavement. It's just so the texture and
the texture is wrong.
They're actually genetically I don't know if you call it genetically altered, but they're altered it when the egg is first fertilized. They'll heat the egg up to about 75 degrees for a few minutes, and it makes it a eunuch. It makes it basically a steer. It's no longer a female or a male. And they do that so it'll grow fast. And so they get these blunt-headed. You can always tell the farm salmon because it has a blunt head, because they've been actually genetically altered.
That's just weird.
It is absolutely weird. And they market them, and they've allowed Costco, they being the government, has allowed Costco to bring their fish in filleted to California. In other words, they don't have to bring the whole fish in. They can fillet them down in Chile. They put them on their planes. They're all filleted. They're perfect size, 10 pounds, and they bring them up here. They have a great marketing tool for Mid-America.
Now, in the past, has there been a regulation that said that salmon had to come into California whole fish?
Well, there's always been now I'm going to be a little bit off on this, but there's always been, you know, there's certain size limits of salmon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to have 27-inch salmon. Mm-hmm. It has to be, for sports guys, it's 22 inches or 24, I don't know, but mm-hmm. ours is 27 inches. And so we were trying to hold them to that also, that same, you know, them being the industry, the farm salmon industry, to that same, you know, size limit. And a fillet is smaller than a whole fish, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was basically technicalities, but a big business. It's, you know, people love to have their Costco salmon, you know. Except those foodies in Sonoma County.
Right. Except all the people who buy from you at the farmer's market.
Well, I've had so many people this year, because these fish are so stuffed for these little krill, that they just come and they say, you know, I've never tasted salmon so good. One lady said it was the best meal she's ever had in her life.
Wow. Well, you know, this year, your salmon is so good. It's some of the best I have tasted in years. And I meant to buy some today, and I was doing too many things. I spaced out. I was going to get it just before I left, and I just spaced out.
But I do have a confession to make. I did the other day when I caught a big fat salmon. And I cut him open. He had this big, fat gut full of these krill. I rinsed them off in salt water, and I ate some of those krill just to see what they tasted like.
What were they like?
They were wonderful.
Were they like little shrimps?
Little,
yeah.
Little shrimps.
That is so,
you know,
what a great story.
So I think
story.
I'll start the krill diner.
That is a great story. We're going to take another little musical break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Mouthful. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in, for sticking with us. I'm talking with Dave LeGros, who can just talk about fishing so interestingly. And we're going to come back to the subject of salmon. But now I want to talk about the other stuff you do, because you sell other fish. You don't get only those beautiful Gulf prawns from Jimmy. Don't you get some other things from Louisiana?
I get the flounder. It's a byproduct.
Byproduct?
Yeah, well, they catch them in the same, I say a byproduct, they catch them in the same nets they catch the shrimp in.
Oh, so it's a bycatch.
It's a bycatch, yeah.
I love that flounder. I can eat it almost every day of the week. It's so good.
Well, you know, Paul Prudhomme has one of his signature dishes is a broiled flounder, gray flounder, and it's on his web. I actually was Googling up gray flounder one time, and that popped up. This nice little, I guess he puts a lot of herbs and spices on it, and he puts it up in the broiler with a little bit of fluids and tomatoes and stuff, and gets a good roast out of it. So
yeah, it's got a wonderful, wonderful texture.
Yeah, it holds up real well.
Holds up really well, and it's just got a wonderful sea flavor.
Killer for fish tacos.
I bet.
You cut them in a diagonal, you know, you get maybe three tacos out of one
filet. Oh, sure. At least three. Absolutely. Yeah. But you also have other seafood. You have ahi. That song we just played by Hapa was about a Hawaiian song about going out and gathering seaweed. And I know you've gotten seaweed for me when I've needed it.
Yeah,
for.
Well, I like to get a little bit of everything. I like to have different things on the table because there's so much wonderful fresh fish out there.
Mm-hmm.
Halibut is a wonderful product.
Yeah.
I had some great Alaskan halibut this week. Usually I have a local California halibut, which is a different taste and a different texture, but very, very tasty. The Alaskan halibut is a little oilier. It holds up better on the grill.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's up with sand dabs? You never have sand dabs.
Never have sand dabs.
Why?
Well,
she whines.
Well, because the flounder sort of fits that.
It does.
The market,
okay.
You know, and they're a little brittle and for my, you know, I'm just not a sand dab person.
Oh, okay. Know? Fair enough.
And I probably haven't had a good vendor to find them, you know, a wholesaler to get them from.
So that other fish that you're bringing to the market, you have Jimmy from Gulf Fish,
right.
And then you have you get it from other.
I get the halibut. I just try and find a fresh, mm-hmm.
Where do you have to go?
I'm down at Pier 45, Pier 33, prowling around.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I have
interesting places. At what time do you go?
You go early. Fishing's
like
early.
5 in the morning.
They're
or
there. Yeah, 5 o'clock. They're there from 3 o'clock till about 11 or 12.
Uh-huh.
And it's just fish are coming in and going out. I mean, there's 200-pound tuna laying there, and they're butchering away on it, and you know.
Is it an auction, or is it just purchase?
No,
they've
purchased. They've got
purchase
it.
Direct,
they've already made the buy. There's no auctioning down here like they do, like the big Japanese auctions.
Yeah, and I've seen them in Hawaii. I've seen the auctions in Hawaii. They're interesting to watch.
Yeah. But there's a lot of little, you know, guys that fish, that I know, that fish and sell at the farmer's markets. So there's a handful of us through Northern California.
Oh, they're okay.
That give the fresh product, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also sometimes do prepared foods.
Yes, I do. During the slow months and when I was starving to death with no salmon, I developed a real nice chowder, clam chowder, and a nice cioppino.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And sometimes you smoke. You have some smoked fish.
I do smoke, but I pay deference to Paul. Paul Thornton is
absolutely. He's the king.
He's the king. So Paul is the man. And I just when he's not like today, he was not at the Sebastopol market, so I sold a handful of king salmon smoked.
But don't you also sturgeon?
I do sturgeon.
Your smoked sturgeon is really nice.
Yeah, I had a limited people. Fortunately, you can hold it real well. It'll hold good.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I do get a lot of demand for smoked sturgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I do a salmon dip, too, with my smoked salmon. It's killer.
And don't you also do salmon cakes?
And I do the salmon cakes and the crab cakes, yeah.
Now, tell us about your salmon cakes.
Well, I basically, my second daughter, Paula, I used to just, I couldn't afford to eat my own salmon, so I'd sell it. I'd just scrape the bones and make salmon cakes out of it for the family, you know. And I just stole some crab cake recipes that I'd read, you know, mm-hmm. for salmon cakes. And I do the panko crumbs and mm-hmm. peanut oil. They're like magic, you know. You could cook anything with a panko crumb, peanut oil, come out good, you know. But and she suggested, Dad, you ought to sell these things. So I started freezing them and packaging them and selling them, and they have a good response, you know. Uh-huh. People like them.
Now, do you have to have, how many different licenses do you have to do what you do at a farmer's market?
Well, I have to have a commercial license
for fishing,
yeah,
right?
Salmon registration for my boat, a commercial fishing license, which are not too prohibitive. They're not too expensive. Mm-hmm. The health department is pretty good, actually. They require you to just, you know, have a certified kitchen that you do your processing, and I do that. And
so you don't have to have something separate for selling fish?
No.
For the, okay.
Not if you're the catcher and the seller and the processor.
Okay.
Now, if I was to take my smoked salmon and try and sell it in stores,
mm-hmm, that'd be different.
I'd have to go through a whole different thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I just sell it myself.
Uh-huh. And that's cool.
Yeah. Okay. And the health department can control that, see?
Mm-hmm.
And they're happy.
Okay. Then you also do lemonades, like when it's hot or
that
something?
That just happened. Yeah. When it gets over 87 degrees, they line up for lemonade.
And it's a nice lemonade.
Yeah. And I have the ice. You know, I'm the ice man.
So. That's right.
Fish and ice. So
how many of your kids work with you? Three, I think?
Well, Laura, of course, was the pioneer. And she sort of burned out on it, though, but she's got her own job and her own life, you know. But she helps a whole bunch. And then my son, John, he's also going to school, and he's helping out.
And he's also working?
He's working.
Working at K&L Bistro.
Yeah, he's happy there. And they do have my salmon on their menu occasionally, and it seems to be a hit. Then I have my daughter, Ashley, occasionally, begrudgingly helps. And I have my little my 12-year-old Caroline. She likes to come and help, too.
Uh-huh.
So, and
a family venture.
Pretty much, well, you know, a limited amount. It's basically a one-man show, you know.
How do you like to prepare your salmon?
You know, I throw it in a frying pan.
Yeah.
I'm lazy. I just, you
that's
know,
not necessarily
medium
lazy.
Hot, medium hot, a lot of butter, you know, and just, my magic herb, not herb, but my magic spice is a little bit of garlic powder, just a little dash on top with butter.
Uh-huh.
It seems to do wonderful things to fish and steaks, mm-hmm. you know.
Now, do you prefer salmon fillets or salmon steaks?
Oh, fillets.
Okay, good, on. I was sure you were going to say fillets.
Yeah.
I'm glad you don't see steaks quite as often as you used to. People finally figured out that
old-timer asked for them. It's just bony. I mean, it's just a different angle and more bones.
Well, not just that. The belly flap then is, you can't just shear off the belly,
right?
Like you can with fillet.
You know, some of the wholesalers, when they fillet their fish, cut their bellies out and keep them in bags and can hardly get rid of them. You know, yeah. I used to get them when I did some salmon cake cookouts for some benefits. I cooked several hundred salmon cakes, and I would get them from the wholesalers, though.
You would get salmon bellies?
The pieces, and I'd crunch them up and make the cakes out of them.
Wow.
Yeah. That's really tasty.
If you just fry it up really quickly in a hot pan, maybe a little butter.
Yeah, it's a magical thing. We'll see a lot more of it now.
Like a minute or 2 minutes on each side. It's so good. It's so sweet.
Yeah. But one of the things I'm hoping will happen with the fact that we have some wonderful local salmon now is it will flesh out these chefs that have been using these, and they have to use them because they have to survive the farm salmon on their menus and not show
identify it.
Not identify it as farmed.
Yeah. Anytime you see Atlantic salmon, it's farmed, right?
Yeah. And most of the time it just says salmon. And sometimes it'll actually lie and say wild salmon, you know.
That's bad.
I've had some discussions with some chefs at restaurants before.
Really? What do they say about
that? My family
is
very embarrassed when I go to restaurants, especially the better restaurants.
How do they defend themselves?
Well, they you know what they do? They really just sort of become acquiescent and sort of kissy buddy, and they go, "Oh, well, I want to get some. Give me some." You know, they sort of
okay.
You know,
yeah.
Like I'm going to get it tomorrow. You know, can you sell me some? That kind of stuff. You know.
Now, what about how trustworthy is retail fish? When you see, you go to any market, you go to Oliver's, G&G, Safeway, whatever, or you go to Farmer's Market with other fish vendors. When someone calls something wild salmon, we tend to believe them. How often do you think it's really true?
Well, I think in the past few years, a lot of people have sold it as wild when it wasn't. But I think it's going to be harder now.
Mm-hmm. You know, so is anyone watching? Anyone?
No,
official?
There's no one.
There's no official.
Yeah, I thought about it, but I haven't got the energy or the time to be the overseer of the farm salmon world.
It's not like the health department shows up and says, okay, show us your label.
No, they don't. They care about cleanliness and health. Right. They don't care about
You know, with shellfish, if you buy clams or oysters, you get that little tag.
You must keep it with them.
Right. But you don't get something like that with salmon. So why just shellfish?
Well, because shellfish are very fragile. And they can...
They want to be able to trace back if you die.
They can get you sick in a minute. Yeah, okay. Yeah, they can get you sick quick. So...
But they don't do the same thing with finfish.
No. Well, the farm salmon industry is big. It's big business. Way bigger than the little fishermen. You know, the little fishermen. Turn of the century, you'll probably won't see any commercial fishermen here on the coast, I would think. You know, I just think it's a... Well, hopefully there are. I mean, certainly...
There's enough romantics in every generation.
I think the people want the food. The people really, the foodies are demanding it. So it's going to be... Thank God for the foodies in Sonoma County, you know.
Yeah. It's... And I guess with some fishermen are really doing well selling, exporting.
There are some.
Talking to one of the Anellos was... I think it was one of the Anello brothers... was talking about the huge market in Korea for this little eel here that nobody here wants. And he showed me these eel catcher tubs that he'd made. And I couldn't believe how much was being sold. Or not so much how much was being sold, how much was wanted by Korea.
And Japan. Japan's been buying salmon recently.
Well, they have their Fukushima salmon problem, right?
I'm not familiar with that.
Aren't some of their fish have high levels of radiation?
Oh, well, sure. They have their own problems because of their...
Fukushima.
Tsunami and everything. But I'm talking about just there's a market there for local salmon that hadn't been there before.
Really?
And also the crabs. China is buying.
Yeah, don't get me started on that.
So there's a lot of... Of course, the guys learned
3,000 pounds a week. I think maybe 4 years ago, 3,000 pounds a week from one fisherman in Bodega Bay going to China.
Yeah. And they have to learn how to give them oxygen and keep them cool. So it's an art to get them, get them alive, you know. So, but that's good for the little fishermen to have that kind of a market. Mm-hmm. It's sad that we're offshooting everything to foreign countries. But then again, you know, the local market can't handle,
I know. If everybody's going to go buy salmon at Costco... You know, what are the fishermen in Bodega Bay going to do?
Right.
That's one of the reasons you should shop at your local farmer's market and support local fishermen so that we continue to have local fishermen.
Well, I've developed a great support, and I have people that show up every Saturday and Sunday, the same people, the same time every day. I mean, you can set your clock by them, 9:15, 9:35, 10:15.
Really?
Yeah, and they just love their little salmon fix, and I'm happy to have them. They're wonderful, you know.
Yeah, I'm mad at myself for spacing out today, but I was at the market I got to the market at 9:30, and I left at 2 with two breaks. I took some things home and came back, and then was just hanging out in downtown Sebastopol, but with the market as my anchor.
Well, I did a lot of trading today. I got a lot of beef and pork
from Brock?
And fruit. Well, Brock wasn't there today.
He was.
Was he there?
Yeah, because I bought, he has beef. And I got young. They're harvested when they were, one. He hasn't harvested this breed in 2 years. And it's pretty small. And I got two ribeye steaks, bone-in, because my favorites. Oh, yeah. And dry aged for 31 days. And he was worried about dry aging it for that long. But the people, I guess at Golden Gate Meats, They were saying, Brock, this is so beautiful. This is so fatty. No problem.
Wow.
So I promised somebody a ribeye steak dinner. So
amazing.
I wanted to get them from Brock.
Well, these grass-fed beef and these hamburgers. I mean, you want to get a hamburger. Get some grass-fed beef for a hamburger at the farmer's market. That's killer.
Yeah. Well, I found once, it takes a few months. If your palate is used to corn-fed beef, grass-fed beef just tastes different.
Yeah.
And it takes a while. But I did a meat CSA. And by the time I was done with that meat CSA, I lost my taste for corn-fed meat. Grass-fed meat is just a little bit different for cooking it. You have to cook it hotter and briefer, you know.
That's another thing about farm salmon. They're corn-fed. It's all corn-based.
But isn't it corn and tallow?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the tallow, I mean, if we could just really go to town on farm salmon. But more than one scientist worry that mad cow disease will find its entry into humans through farm salmon, because
that's something I would say. something I would bring up, but I don't.
This is a very legitimate scientist, because prions you don't detect by current methods of detection. You have to go a step further to find the prions, and prions can easily make it into beef tallow because you're melting down everything. You know, you're rendering everything that's left, so you're getting the spinal cord and the brain, two of the places where the prions cause the mad cow disease, and then that rendered fat goes into binding the corn and other things that the farm salmon eat. So it could, in theory, I mean, that's the fear.
I'm going to get a bumper sticker that says, farm salmon leads
equals
to
mad cow disease.
You will die. Okay,
yeah.
There it is.
So anyway, well, it's a pretty legitimate source, and I think there's quite, if you want to look it up, I've read some studies about it. So I don't think this is an apocryphal story. I think this is pretty legitimate. Did a radio show about it several years ago when one of the first uproars about farm salmon, which didn't seem to get the legs that I thought it was going to.
Well, it doesn't get the legs because everybody's using it and eating it in these restaurants.
It just doesn't, if nothing else, be a sensualist. It doesn't taste good, you know? That's the thing. It just doesn't taste
marketing.
As good.
It's all marketing.
Yeah, it is. So, do you do special orders?
Sure.
What's the best way for people to do a special order with you? Come find you at the market?
Yeah, find me at the market. And I can, I've done 20, 30 pounds. I've done weddings.
I supply the fish. So, if somebody needs 10 salmon for a wedding, give you a couple weeks' notice?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I could do large fillets. I could cut them up.
Oh, you'll fillet them too?
Yeah, whatever they want.
Awesome.
All vacuum packed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You don't have a website, do you?
No.
Facebook page?
No.
No. Email?
I use an eraser.
And you're writing your book with a typewriter?
Old typewriter. I got Herb Cain's old typewriter.
Oh, cool. So it's magic.
Yeah, magic.
So you prefer people to just come and find you at the farmer's market?
Yes, I'm just a small time. You know, I love fishing, and I love selling the fish on the weekends. You know.
And let's recap the markets.
Saturday at Healdsburg from 9 till noon. My son is at Wells Fargo, and my daughter, Laura, also, from 9 till 1:30. Or about 1, I guess. Actually, it's 8:30 to 1 at the Wells Fargo, I believe.
Yes, 8:30 to 1.
And then I do Sebastopol from 9 to 1:30 on Sunday.
And which one are we most likely to find you at? Sebastopol and Healdsburg?
Sebastopol, Healdsburg.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, I know you were really tired today, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to come on Mouthful.
Well, hey, thanks for having me.
It's great. And I love talking fishing. I wish I had the nerve to go out, but I don't.
They have a new patch, you know. They have new
patches. Yeah. We'll talk off the air. And on that note, we're out of time here on Mouthful. But tune in next week when we're going to have a return visit for the full hour by phenomenal baker Craig Ponsford, founder of Artisan Bakery and now a partner in Community Grains. It's Michelle and Jordan. Have a great week. Be nice to each other and to yourself. I wish I was
of this story. Well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Let's go. Got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
Got some beans and good cornbread.
Listen to what the preacher says.